business software giant Salesforce.com on Monday announced it's buying big data firm Tableau Software for $15 billion, its most expensive acquisition ever. So why is big data such a big deal? Because it helps uncover hidden patterns and market trends that give companies greater insight into their customers. Tableau's more than 86,000 clients include corporate heavyweights such as Verizon and Netflix.
A new defense and aerospace giant is in the making. Raytheon and United Technologies Corp are set to merge. That would create a company worth about $121 billion and mark the biggest ever merger in the sector. United Technologies Corp is best known for its Pratt & Whitney aircraft engines. Raytheon is big in defense electronics and weapons.
Mexico's foreign minister on Monday said the country will take measures to stem the flow of migrants headed toward the U.S. border and will reevaluate the success of those efforts after 45 days. Those measures, part of a deal reached with the U.S. and announced last week. The agreement comes after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to impose tariffs on Mexico if it did not do something to dramatically cut the number of Central Americans seeking asylum at the U.S. border.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's June 11th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We have all the latest intel from the world of business with markets coming up shortly this morning on the program. We have rescheduled to today our conversation with Shiraz Mian at Zacks Investment Research. We expect to have him on at about 5:38 this morning to talk about the retail sector scorecard. Of course, we'll talk about investments as well and trends on Wall Street. That'll be bright and early at 5:38 this morning here on the program. We'll also make sure you're up to date on the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports as we move through the hour. And that'll all be happening today here on The Opening Bell. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks started off the trading week by closing yesterday in positive territory. The higher close with thanks in part to a deal between the United States and Mexico to avoid tariffs. President Trump has said his threat, though, to impose tariffs on Mexico still exists if they do not do what they were said to have been agreed to in this deal that he has announced in trade with China. Trump believes they're getting decimated by the tariffs there because companies are leaving the country, although there's no evidence of that happening. Also, this morning, China firing back at the president, digging in even further in the trade war with the United States. So let's look at the markets this morning. Where do they stand? Dow futures are pointing toward another morning of opening gains at the opening bell, up 115 points on the Dow, more than a half a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures were up about a half a percent as well this morning. As we look around the rest of the world, in London, markets are higher by about a half a percent. In Germany, by a percent and a quarter. In France, by nearly three quarters of a percent. And in Asia this morning, all the markets there appear to be in the green. The Nikkei is going to end the day up nearly a third, 69.86. That's how high it closed today. And the Hang Seng in Hong Kong up nearly 210 points. The Shanghai up nearly 73 points, nearly 2.5%. And oil in the United States is at 53.69 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. First of all, some CEOs, top executives at some of America's biggest companies say the restrictive new abortion laws being enacted by a number of state legislatures is bad for business. More than 180 CEOs have written an open letter urging lawmakers to step back from laws passed recently, like states in like Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio. Business leaders argue that those laws hinder people's health, independence, and ability to fully succeed in the workplace. The letter ran as a full-page ad in yesterday's New York Times and was posted online as well. CEOs signing the letter include Atlantic Records and Warner Music's groups, Julie Greenwald, Bloomberg's Peter Grau, Slack Technology's Stuart Butterfield, Square's Jack Dorsey, also Yelp's Jeremy Stoppelman, and fashion mogul Diane von Furstenberg. Also today, there is a word that Arizona Specialty Pharmaceutical Company has become the first opioid manufacturer to file for bankruptcy after settling a multi-million dollar legal battle over the company's role in the nation's opioid crisis. Insys, the company named Insys Therapeutics, announced that it filed for Chapter 11 in bankruptcy court yesterday. The decision comes just a day after the company agreed to settle criminal and civil cases for $225 million with the federal government over claims it bribed doctors to prescribe a fentanyl-based opioid medication. Google is expanding in Southeast Michigan. The tech giant announced yesterday that it's investing $17 million to expand its offices in Detroit and Ann Arbor, giving itself a total of 260,000 square feet of space in that state. The company says the move will create new jobs, but it hasn't released an exact number. The Detroit expansion should be finished in 2020, while the Ann Arbor expansion is expected to be done in early 2022. The big tech is still in the sights of lawmakers in Washington. The House Judiciary Committee today will launch its investigation into the market dominance of Silicon Valley's biggest names, including Facebook, Google, and Amazon. The hearing will look at the impact of the tech giants' platforms on news content, on the media, and the spread of information online. In a capital steeped in partisanship, the committee's investigation of tech market power stands out. Not only is it bipartisan, but it's also the first such review by Congress of a sector that for more than a decade has enjoyed favored status and a light touch from federal regulators. We want to spend this segment taking a dive into the retail sector with a scorecard from Zacks Investment Research. The director of research at Zacks is with us this morning, Shiraz Mian. Shiraz, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Steve.
Let's talk a little bit about how the retail sector did in the quarter that we're just seeing all the results come in on. If you had to give it a grade or a score, what would it be?
It was below average. The estimates and expectation had already come down for retail as for the broader market, and the sector, particularly the traditional operators, the brick and mortar players, both on the discount side as well as in the department store space, they failed to impress comps or same store sales were below expectations, and many of the operators provided outlooks that came in below what the market had penciled in. So by and large, results were on the weak side, and that's reflected in the market reaction to those results as well.
What do you think is at play with some of these retailers, especially the ones that had the more disappointing results?
It's a mixed play. The issues in the retail space are not new. Some of these are more of the secular nature in the sense that there is this structural shift going on over the last many years with foot traffic to the physical stores steadily coming down and business shifting to the digital space. We know about the Amazon phenomenon and all of that. And a number of these players have done a fairly good job in responding to that. Macy's comes to mind in that they call this blended offering omni-channel retailing where they leverage their physical asset and digital asset in providing services to these guys. So it's a combination of factors. There's been some issues with the broader economy as well that appears to have been weighing on sentiment. And then it's the ongoing issue of the secular shift to the digital space and the inability of the traditional players to effectively respond to that.
Yeah, and you hit on a couple of things there. First, I'll talk to you a little bit about the trends in the economy. Is this to suggest that perhaps people, and we've seen some of this in the data recently, that maybe people are pulling back on their purchases?
It's the economy, if you look in the aggregate, Steve, it still appears fairly healthy. But that said, there is some element of caution. Both from households as well as from businesses. So the uncertainty related to trade, the slowdown in economic growth beyond the U.S. appears to be starting to show up in data to some extent. We saw that in the jobs data. We saw that in the durable goods and business spending trends, some evidence is showing up on the manufacturing side as well. So yes, on the margin, the growth trend in the U.S. economy appears to be moderating, though the outlook for the U.S. economy is still a lot better than is the case for Europe and other major economies.
You know, Shiraz, as I read your take on all of this, I know that you kind of add in Amazon into the general picture of how retail is doing. Talk to us a little bit about why that is in there, and if you had to take Amazon out, what does the picture look like?
You know, the growth picture drops even more if we look at the results for this quarter, for the Q1 results for the retail sector. So Amazon, particularly on the revenue side, has been a very strong growth player, and we include Amazon in the retail sector because at the end of the day, Amazon is a retail player, and it competes with the traditional retail players, though some do legitimately argue that Amazon has this very big Amazon Web Services, which is a big player in the cloud computing business, and would argue that Amazon deserves to be included in the broader tech space. But that's a back and forth argument, Steve, that continues to go on between us and our customers. But we feel strongly that Amazon competes with retail. It aspires to be a retail player. It needs to be included in that space. So in the aggregate, if we look at the performance of the retail sector in terms of earnings, growth appears decent. But when you look at it on an ex-Amazon basis, it's a lot more weaker.
If you had to pick out some companies from this sector who are doing better than others, again, Amazon may be on the sidelines for this question. What would they be?
I would say, as I mentioned earlier, Macy's, even though you wouldn't know that by looking at Macy's stock price performance, has a pretty compelling offering, which blends its physical asset, a very good digital offering, into providing customers with a service that I hope and I feel will stand them better than compared to the other traditional department store operators. I strongly feel about Walmart as well. Walmart similarly has a very effective strategy, and they are spending in their business, they are spending in their employees, and has a pretty effective digital offering. Though the company's results are being affected by those spending trends, but in the long run, Walmart appears to be a pretty effective competitor to Amazon in the space. On the DIY home housing side, Home Depot and Lowe's both are doing pretty good. The businesses are relatively Amazon-proof, and trends in their demand are more tied to what's happening to the housing than what Amazon could do to their business.
Yeah, and you know, we look too at Home Depot and Lowe's for examples too. I wonder how much the weather in the springtime, late winter, early spring, and here now in the early summer has impacted this, because we've had a lot of rain here in the Midwest, and other parts of the country have had bad weather too. Do you think that's impacting their numbers?
It was a big factor. In fact, the late arrival of spring is always a factor with them, and that showed up in the numbers for both of those guys. But broadly speaking, there is some some uncertainty about the housing sector. Even though interest rates have come down recently, the cyclical fears that perhaps the U.S. economy is reaching the end of the economic expansion, and that has historically had a negative bearing on the housing sector, has some negative and moderating effect on demand for housing-related products and services. That's a bigger issue on the home builders as well as the Home Depot and Lowe's. But you're absolutely right, Steve. The seasonal factors always have a near-term bearing on numbers, and we saw that in the Q1 numbers for Home Depot and Lowe's as well.
So let me ask you to get your crystal ball out. What does the next half of the year hold for this sector and maybe into early 2020?
So more of the same would be my expectation, though on the margin, given how weak results were in Q1, estimates have come down even further for the June quarter. And that always makes it relatively easier for these players to beat expectations. Broadly beyond the retail sector, Steve, the growth picture for the entire S&P 500 isn't that impressive. In fact, the entire year is effectively flat. For Q2, for the June quarter, the expectation is for earnings growth that's -3% currently, meaning earnings on a year-over-year basis are expected to decline. We had something similar expected for Q1 as well, and we ended up close to the a flat line for the quarter. We are up against some very tough comparisons in 2018, and as a result, the growth expectations for 2019 have been washed out. 2020 appears a lot better. Growth is expected to resume. And the expectation is for double-digit growth in the first quarter of 2020. A lot will depend on how expectations for 2020 evolve as we go through this back half of the year.
Yeah, and I think the wild card here is if we happen to get a deal with China and this trade dispute ends, that could be a game changer in many regards too, couldn't it?
Absolutely. It is such a major dampener on sentiment, particularly with respect to business sentiment. And if we do get a deal, there will be a huge boost to sentiment as well as actual spending plans for many of these companies. A lot will ride on what the Fed does as well. The Fed appears to be getting ready that if this trade tension and trade uncertainty continues to play in the market at least is expecting that they will cut interest rates. There is a holding up the major indexes currently, but that will have a bearing on expectations as well as actual results in the back half as well as in the beginning of 2020.
Shiraz, always good conversation. We appreciate you taking time out for us this morning.
Glad to be with you, Steve.
Shiraz Mian, Director of Research at Zacks Investment Research. You can find them online at Zacks.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up 113 points. NASDAQ futures are up more than 0.5%. S&P futures up about 0.5%. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we take a look at the planting report yesterday from the USDA, the Department of Agriculture said corn planting was 83% complete. That's up from 67% a week ago. And the agency rated 59% of the crop as good to excellent, down sharply from the 77% they showed a year ago. Soybeans, usually planted later than corn, were 60% planted. That's up from 39% a week ago, but below the average for 88% at this time of the year. And taking a look at closing prices at the Board of Trade yesterday, we saw soybeans up 3 3/4, corn up 0.25 cents, and wheat up 2.5 cents. Meanwhile, in livestock futures trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, hog futures were higher. Traders relieved by President Trump's call to not invoke the tariffs that he talked about on Mexican goods. And so at the end of the day yesterday, the August lean hog contract was up $2.35 a hundredweight, August live cattle up $2.85, and August feeder cattle up $2.15. I guess this should come as no surprise. The fuel industry in the United States has filed an injunction against President Trump's decision to allow E15 sales the year round. That came from the fuel industry, the American Fuels and Petrochemical Association, and the Renewable Fuels Association is intervening to support the EPA E15 rule. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, June 11th. This day's economic reports focus on small business and producer prices. The Small Business Optimism Index for May is out. Analysts see the index slipping just a bit from April's reading, but still very high. The May producer price index is due out as well. Experts predict a 0.2% gain over April and a 2% increase over May of last year. We'll also get Redbook numbers on the retail sector. On the earnings calendar today, Dave and Buster's, Casey's General Stores, HD Supply, and H&R Block, among those companies reporting quarterly earnings. Also today, the Tesla shareholder meeting and the E3 gaming conference begins. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi is at the Economic Club of Washington. So there are lots of things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, June 11th.